This is Tom Waddle on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast, sponsored by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Hope everyone had a great weekend. Winter has turned into summer like it normally does here in Chicago.
Did you turn on the air conditioners in your house?
Oh my gosh, yes. I was just thinking about that last night, Waddle. There's nothing like it when it's humid and warm and nice outside and you got that nice, cool AC on. That's just a comforting feeling, and it's nice and cool in your bedroom, and you're underneath the
Don't you remember as a kid not having air conditioning?
It had to get hot for us to turn the AC on.
Oh, my mom was just horrible with that.
This was basically windows open weather.
Yes, no doubt. And it had to be like 30 degrees for a long stretch before we'd turn the heater on.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
We would get to the heat quick.
It was about saving as much money as you could.
Oh, the air would be so still. There would be no wind coming into my bedroom as a kid. And then, like, it would be noisy and nothing. And it was just
hot. Except the sweet sound of ladies whispering into your window as a young lad.
I was like nine. I was sweating in my bed. And I'm like, what do I have to do to get some AC in here? You know, then when I was older, when I first moved out, then I lived in one of those places that didn't even have AC.
Right. There's nothing worse than laying in your own sweat.
It's just awful. Did you ever put like the fan in the window to create the coolness? You know,
absolutely.
The more of an airflow.
That was
my Iowa AC. The fan in the window.
And then at some point, though, it was just pumping the hot air of a good August day in Iowa right into your room.
Oh yeah, the smell of corn.
Smell of corn, bacon. That's awesome. Listen, I'm telling you, just to be able to walk outside and take the dog like a half a mile down the street and break a sweat was glorious.
I love
all these things for granted. For sure.
I will never complain about the humidity or the heat or whatever. It's fabulous. So I just wanted to give everybody an update. So I was gone, obviously, Friday. Friday was the first day for me for chemo, and I want to thank all the supporters out there. Everyone's been fantastic reaching out. All the people at Northwestern who's helped me through this. And Waddle, it was, you know, the unknown is something. You know, you go into this, and you're sitting in that chair, and they're giving you these medicines through IV bags, and they're giving it to you through your chest because it goes through the port. And, you know, at first they're like, this is what you're getting, and you could have this from this. And, you know, during everything, the 5-6 hours it took, I had no side effects in the chair.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So I was very lucky. And when I got home, though, is when, you know, I was, like, feeling really good. I was almost a little cocky. My wife made me, like, a big bowl of scrambled eggs. I'm like, I can eat whatever I want. Here's some eggs. And then, like, that evening, Friday night, just things got weird. I never got sick, but I just never really felt like myself. Like, the mind plays a weird thing in all this. The way the drugs feel on your mind, the nausea, the dizziness, the fogginess. And for me, it lasted about 20 hours. I did not sleep a wink Friday night.
Oh, wow.
You know, really? they give you prednisone. And usually, like, when I'm sick, they would give me, like, to get deep into the weeds, they would give me 40 milligrams of prednisone when I was sick, when I was younger. When you're on chemo, prednisone is part of the regimen, and they give you 100 milligrams a day. So there's a high dose of prednisone, and it just makes you hopped up. Like, even now, today is my last day of prednisone for this cycle. So, like, right now, I'm so hopped up. And then I've got Benadryl in me because I'm trying to bring me down a little bit, too. And I got a little caffeine in me.
You got the whole thing working.
Yeah, it's like, so you're, but anyway, I did not sleep Friday. I started to get nauseous, started to get a terrible headache. My doc tweaked my medicines, did it just right. By Saturday night, at about like 20 hours after chemo, I started feeling normal. My son's sixth birthday was Sunday. It was one of those days where it was just weird, where I appreciated every single moment that I felt good on Sunday, because I didn't know if I would feel good, and I did. And I was just, it was one of those cliche things that you hear every day, and no one hates cliches more than me. The take one day at a time, stop and smell the roses. And I've always thought I've had perspective, Waddle, but that day on Sunday, when I had such a crap day on Saturday, where I was just 2 days removed from this, and I was enjoying my son's birthday parade with him, and I was saying that, looking around and seeing all the people driving through and noticing that I felt good, it was just like the only thing that mattered in that moment was that moment, and I didn't give a crap about tomorrow. And
That's
it was
awesome.
Really the first time in my life where I'm always thinking about, well, how am I going to feel tomorrow? Am I going to be good tomorrow? Will I feel worse tomorrow? Will I feel better tomorrow?
Who are the Cubs going to start?
Right. Is John Lester going to have enough to get through the whole year? Is Yu Darvish going to get his control?
Why did Ryan Pace draft Mitch instead of, at the very least, Deshaun Watson?
Why is Matt Nagy getting so cute and not committing to the run?
Yeah.
You know, is Nick Foles just kind of a bridge quarterback?
So, yesterday, what you're saying is you spent the entire day thinking about Chicago sports because you missed a day on Friday or something.
No. And yesterday was the same. And it, like, two of those days were like my two favorite health days I've had in like forever, even before I was sick. So that was really cool. And I'm sure you hear that a lot of people go, and they call this a journey, and there's nothing better describes this than a journey. And so, you know, now I get about 15, 16 more days off, and then I do this again for the second cycle, and I repeat this six different times. So fingers crossed, you know, I had a huge lump on my neck. That thing has completely gone down.
Wow.
Like if you looked at me today, Waddle, and you knew what I had, or you didn't know what I had, you wouldn't know. Like before, it looked like I had a goiter on my neck.
Yeah.
Because all the lymph nodes were swollen. Yeah, they tell me that it is, you'll be shocked by, this is like, we view chemo as like something evil because of the bad, what it does to your body.
Right.
But what this is great medicine that helps you heal. And right away, it already has taken away the swelling in my lymph nodes.
Wow.
So,
and my guess is a lot of that is due to the advancements that have been made possible by a lot of the money that's been raised over the course of the last several decades.
You're a pro. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the mission that we've been doing with this T-shirt thing. It is not about me. It is not about this radio station. But I got to tell you this, that the management of this radio station and the people in promotions that teamed with Obvious Shirts, they've made it so easy to partner with everybody and to get the word out there. So we created two styles of T-shirts that we are selling, and the money will donate the V Foundation. And what Waddle mentioned is true. Because of every cent the V Foundation spends, and this was brought up, I don't know if you remember the part in the Lance Armstrong documentary, Waddle, but Lance Armstrong talked about, you know, one of the Cancer Society charities that he wanted to partner with originally when he had testicular cancer.
That's the last part that I saw was that's why he went and created his own.
So he created his own because he couldn't believe all the money that was bogged down in doing nothing.
Right.
All this money that wasn't going to research, that wasn't helping people who were going through this fight for the first time. And the thing that's been great about the V Foundation is there are no overhead costs that get in the way. Every cent that you donate to the V Foundation goes towards cancer research. So for Mark Silverman in 2020, I am getting better care and better advancements than Mark Silverman would have gotten when I was talking about this stuff on the air in 2014 or 2015. And in 2025, when someone you may know could be going through this. It's going to be even better for you. And then hopefully there will be a day when we cure cancer. So that's what we're trying to do here in my journey, is just bring a little more awareness and raise a little more money. And Obvious Shirts has, they have created two great logos. The Chicago logo, the Sylvie Strong campaign with the radio microphone and headset. And then the Mason logo that says Sylvie is strong. It's a caricature of me. And it's a brilliant picture.
I was going to say, amazing how spot on the drawing is as well.
Yeah, exactly. The muscle. The definition on the muscle is perfect.
Yes.
So you can buy yours at obviousshirts.com. They have a style for everybody as far as sizes. They have the V-neck for women. They have the, you know, women's sizes if you don't want V-necks. They have kids' sizes. They have, you know, every kind you can imagine, you know, extra small through double X for men.
I'm not going to lie to you, too. I'm not going to wear the women's version, but I like a good V-neck T-shirt every now and again. So I wish that over the course of time, there'll be more men's T-shirts created in the V-neck fashion.
Right.
Just adding
this one's a pretty
you could
deep
wear
v.
it. It'll just accentuate
it's
your ample
v.
bosom.
It's yeah. a deep V.
Deep V. Yeah, that's all.
Just let that breathe.
Yeah.
But anyway, my wife said to me, she was doing the laundry, and she said, you know what? These T-shirts get softer as you wash them. And I go, you don't understand about Obvious Shirts. That's why we did it with them. Because Waddle and I are snobs when it comes yes. to the T-shirt.
No doubt.
We won't wear any T-shirt. You know how many free T-shirts we've gotten through the years? And then we appreciate them, but then we keep them in our office. And then we give them away on like prizes. But these T-shirts are buttery soft. So I'm proud to say, Waddle, to make a long story short, and I've gone very long with this, that we are just a tick under $20,000 raised
wow.
for the V Foundation.
Hotcakes sold like hotcakes.
So my goal still here is $25,000. If we can write a big check, and I've always had a dream of presenting the big check. I've never been able to really present a big check.
Wait a second. Did you dream of receiving a big check or giving a big check back in the day when you were a kid?
I think it's both, isn't it? I mean, you like to give, too. I think you like to give more than you like to get.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I do like to give, for sure.
But everyone loves to get the check, and like that big check, it's always so,
yeah.
you know, it's so symbolic.
It's the same amount of money, whether it's, you know, a small check or a big check, but the big check makes you feel big.
Yes, it makes you feel like you're on a game show.
Yeah.
So the way you buy it is go to obviousshirts.com. It's right on the front page. If you have not done it, do so, and thank you, friends, for supporting this cause. Thank you, friends, for caring about me and this journey, and I hope you don't mind the updates. I'm open to sharing it, and I hope it makes it easier for people who go through this because there are advancements, and you do feel good. In just the days. I mean, I'm sitting outside enjoying a great meal with my wife last night after the kids got to bed, just 2 days removed from chemo. Like, it isn't like the movies where, I mean, it's different for everybody. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, there are really good days with the types of doctors and medicine that we have today with fighting this.
Well, that's all good news for sure. No doubt.
All right. So we've got the NHL announcement coming up at 3:30. Let's continue to talk about getting back to sports.
By the way,
golf.
And I watched an interview today on CNBC about 12:30 where Tom Ricketts was interviewed, so I could bring you some of the thoughts that he had for the cameras as well.
Would fans accept for 1 year, shall I call it the nuclear option for Wrigley Field? I want to ask you that coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, from what we understand, the owners have given their proposal, their new proposal for finances to Major League Baseball players in the union. Jesse has called in and he has some details. Jesse's been all over this story. Him and Jeff Passan have done great work, not just locally, but nationally. And can we get baseball back soon? Will the players accept this? Is this any better? Jesse, how you feeling and what you got?
Yeah, doing well, guys. We're starting to hear some details of the economic proposal from the league to the players. It's just the first step here. But the bottom line is right now they're asking the top earners to take a further 30% cut, or about 30% cut of the 50%. Remember, they were down to 50% for their salary. So from that 50%, they're asking them to take another 30%. So, for example, if a guy was making $10 million, he would now make $3.5 million. He would make 35% of his total salary for 2020. So a further 30. Now, the less you make, the less of a cut you have to take. I think the lowest earners will have to cut maybe 10 or 15%. But the top earners are being asked to cut around 30%. Now, from what I hear, the players are probably going to respond with, no, why don't you pay us our full freight? But defer it, pay us next year, pay us the year after, and hopefully there'll be a middle ground. So no revenue sharing proposal. It's a straight cut from a sliding scale, starting with 30% off the 50% they were going to make, and that's for the top earners, and then it'll go down from there.
Yeah, my guess, Jess, is that this is going to sow a little division between the players. I know that this works in different industries, but the purpose of doing of the higher paid employees taking a higher percentage cut versus the what it does is it protects the entire business from furloughs and layoffs. If you go back to baseball, you're not furloughing or laying off the lower paid players. Nobody's going to lose their. It's not like, okay, so we're only going to play 82 games, so we'll keep all the top paid guys. So 15 guys stay and we're going to release the rest of you. We're going to lay the rest. No, that's not the way it is. So to me, this sounds like a negotiating tactic that the owners are using. And obviously this is a cynical perspective, trying to sow a little, the seeds of discord amongst the players.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a first step. There's no way the players are accepting that. In fact, I think it's the big guns that are going to say no quicker than the guys that are paid less. Like if you were going to make 1.5 million, let's say you were going to make 3 million, then you're down to 1.5 for half the season. Now you're asked for a 10%, you're down to 1.4, 1.3. You're going to do that. You're going to do that, especially since you weren't crushing it anyway at 3 million, I mean, in baseball terms. But if you were going to make 10 and it's now down to 3.5, you might still take it, obviously, you know, and in our world we take it. But if you're making 20, it's way down under, you know, you're going to start to think more about, well, you know what, maybe we shouldn't play. So I do think it's the top guns that are going to balk more than the guys making $2-3 million, because it's not that big of a dip. Plus, they need $1 million or $2 million compared to zero, right? They need that a little bit more than the guys that were making 20.
Let me ask you guys both a question. Whether it's next year or 2022, you pick the time frame. Do you guys believe that at some point the owners will get back to a profitability, you know, they'll be profitable, and their franchises will continue? I don't even know even during this time whether or not their franchise, the value of the asset will depreciate. I think that, but my point is give it 2 years. My guess is that asset begins to appreciate again the way it did before. So to me, the only real, true, fair answer is deferred salary.
Yeah.
So the players get their money, but they get it down the road, and the owners get cash flow relief. But they are, as Sylvia, I think that's been your point all along, is that, look, you know, 5 years from now, the owners are going to be worth, instead of $1 billion, $1.2 billion. That's $200 billion, just for example.
Like, guys, today I heard Cap talk about, oh my gosh, the Cubs are missing out on, I forget how much it is, a month without the check they're getting from NBC Sports Chicago. Look, that was their decision to go to Marquee because of the greater. They knew that at first it would be harder, but in the 5-year plan, having your own network would be the greater way to make money. Like, the players shouldn't have to worry about that Tom Ricketts now isn't getting the money that he normally would get from Comcast because they haven't signed up for Marquee yet. Or because, like, there are a lot of these things. Like, in 5 years from now, the Cubs took a lot of risk today that they're going to be hurting through this. Cash flow is going to be hard. But in 5 or 10 years from now, that team is going to be worth so much more. The Ricketts are going to be so much richer. And to me, for the players to have to front this money and to never see it, I don't think is the right way to go.
Yeah, I don't either. And remember this, Tommy, if they defer it over the next 2 or 3 years, how do the owners make up for that? The fans. They can raise ticket prices. They can raise beer prices, parking. So the owners will make up that money to be able to pay those deferments plus those salaries in 21 and 22. It does seem like the compromise, but obviously the owners are going to start on one side of this thing. It started with revenue sharing. Now they've come off of that. Players are going to go with pay us our full thing, and maybe they'll come off of that. So hopefully deferments is the compromise, because I do not think the players will accept this first offer, 30% discount off the 50% already for the top earners.
The problem is the with these are virtual monopolies, because there's nowhere else for you. Like, if you if you're like you work in the computer chip industry, just for basic terms, and you work for Intel. Well, if you don't like what's going on at Intel, you can go to AMD and hopefully get us some. So you understand my point. If you don't like what's going on in Major League Baseball, you're not going to the other Major League Baseball league, because there is no other Major League Baseball league, which means these owners ultimately have all of the leverage and all the power in the world. It's just a matter of trying to find a level of fairness, knowing that the owners are their asset isn't going to appreciate if the players aren't on board, and the players aren't going to get paid if they can't strike a deal with the owners. So
yeah,
these are all really difficult negotiations, because there's no competition out there that the players can shop themselves to.
Are we going to have Jesse, are we going to have a bigger divide too? Because like Waddle said, the highest paid players are represented by the biggest and the best, like Scott Boras. They have the biggest egos. They negotiate the hardest. So will this be really hard for the bigger egos with the biggest agents to accept?
I think so. And that's why I think Tommy said it right. Okay, you don't want revenue sharing? Here's a proposal that's going to divide you guys, right? Revenue sharing unified the players, because nobody wanted that. This is going to divide them somewhat. And I think what emerges might still favor the owners at the end of the day. So I think this is all, I mean, these guys are professional negotiators, right? So I think it's a tactic, and it's probably going to work to a certain extent. And back to Tommy's point, they have the ultimate leverage. They could take their ball and go home, the owners, and have no season. You know, Tom Ricketts isn't going to be hurting for money, but some ball players might be that live, you know, to their means and everything. So they don't have as much leverage. They can't sue the owners for anything. They agreed on that in late March, but they have some leverage. They just don't have as much as they might like. But
the other issue here too, guys, is that the collective bargaining agreement is up, and I know that we all live in the world where the owners have all of the power, and they can basically, in some ways, they're going to have the upper hand regardless. But if you're a player, you want some protection going forward. Like, you want to make sure that the free agency market is a real, legitimate marketplace, as opposed to the owners being collectively pissed off and using a pandemic to kind of circumvent the whole collusion, issue by offering crappy free agent contracts. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm not speaking it the correct way, but the owner or the players have something, involved in here too, and
Jesse,
that's future earning power.
We got to run because we've got to carry this NHL press conference. All right, Jesse, thank you.
Thanks,
you
Jess.
Got it, boys.
All right, we're going to break for a couple minutes. When we get back, return to sports, the NHL announcement.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
All right, we got the press conference going on, the NHL announcing the return to play. Here's Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Of the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs and how we will conduct the 2020 NHL draft lottery. Before I get into the details, I want to make clear that the health and safety of our players, coaches, essential support staff, and our communities are paramount. While nothing is without risk, ensuring health and safety has been central to all of our planning so far and will remain so. Let me assure you that the reason we are doing this is because our fans are telling us in overwhelming numbers that they want us to complete the season, if at all possible. And our players and our teams are clear that they want to play and bring the season to its rightful conclusion. Although we are anxious to get back on the ice, we will not do anything until we are assured by medical professionals and the relevant government authorities that it is safe and prudent to do so. I want to thank Executive Director Don Fear, Special Assistant to the Executive Director Matthew Schneider, and all members of the NHL Players Association, particularly players Ron Hainsey, Connor McDavid, Mark Scheifele, John Tavares, and James Van Riemsdyk, who were part of our joint return to play committee. It took a great deal of collaborative effort to get where we are today, and their insight, input, wisdom, and passion for our game and its traditions were essential to the process that produced the plan I'll now outline. I also want to thank Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly and league staff and medical personnel who worked tirelessly to craft this plan, and the members of the NHL Board of Governors who once again put aside personal preferences to approve a plan that we believe is fair to all of the teams and our best option under the circumstances. It will enable the best playoffs in all the sports to honor our history and produce a champion worthy of claiming the most treasured trophy in all of sports. Now to our return to play plan. When the given go-ahead from the medical experts and the relevant government authorities is given, 24 of our 31 teams will resume play, the top 12 in each conference as ranked by percentage points from our standings as they stood through the games of March 11th when we paused our season as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The remaining seven teams will enter the draft lottery, which I will discuss in detail later. For purposes of nomenclature, record keeping and NHL awards, the 2019-20 regular season has been deemed to be completed. We will resume play and conduct the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs in two hub cities that will be identified and announced at a later date. One will be the site for the resuming Eastern Conference clubs. The other will play host to the resuming Western Conference clubs. Each will have secure arenas, practice facilities, hotels, and local transportation for our players, coaches, and essential staff. We expect that our clubs will be permitted to travel a maximum of 50 personnel to their hub city. A very limited number of support staff will be able to access the event level at each venue. A comprehensive system of testing will be in place in each hub city. We are currently in phase one of our pause, during which clubs have been instructed to self-isolate as much as possible and have done so. In early June, we expect to be able to enter phase two, during which clubs can return to their individual practice facilities for voluntary small group on and off ice training. Yesterday, we released a comprehensive protocol that will govern how we will operate in phase two. Phase three of our return to play plan will be the opening of formal training camps. The timing of our entry into phase three again will be determined by guidance from medical and civil authorities. While we are anxious to open camps as soon as possible, we don't envision doing so before the first half of July. Finally, when appropriate, we will move to phase four, in which our participating clubs will report to their respective hub cities and we will resume play. Obviously, we anticipate playing over the summer and into the early fall. At this time, we are not fixing dates because the schedule of our return to play will be determined both by developing circumstances and the needs of our players. For various reasons, we are also not announcing at this time which two cities will serve as our hubs. Things are evolving rapidly, and when we decide on locations, we want it to be on the best available information at the time that we need to make that determination. In the meantime, I can say we have narrowed the choices to a number of cities that, as of today, include Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Edmonton, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Vancouver. There are no shortage of candidates that can help us do this. Again, the final determination will depend on COVID-19 conditions, testing availability, and government regulations. The top four teams in each conference will claim automatic berths in the first round of the playoffs. They will play intra-conference round robins, each playing the other three teams to determine their respective seeds in the first round. These games will be played with regular season overtime and shootout rules, with ties in the final standings broken by regular season points percentage. The remaining eight teams in each conference will play in best of five qualifying round series to determine which four in each conference advance to the first round of the playoffs. The matchups for these series, again, are based on points percentage at the time of the pause. These games will be played with playoff overtime rules. Once the round robins and qualifying rounds are completed, we will conduct conference-based playoffs in each hub city. The winners of the qualifying round robins will advance to the first round, with each opposing one of the round robin teams. Since we have endeavored to be sensitive to players' preferences, the matchups for the first round series remain to be set, as the Return to Play Committee is still discussing whether to determine them through seeding or via a bracket. In addition, the Return to Play Committee is still discussing the lengths of the first and second round series and whether the second round matchups will be determined through seeding or via bracket. In any scenario, the conference finals and Stanley Cup final will be best of seven. The sites of the conference finals and Stanley Cup final remain to be determined, although based on what we know today, we expect those series to be played in one of the two hub cities. We believe we can get the qualifying and first two rounds of the playoffs completed in little over a month. Here are the 12 teams that will be resuming play in the Eastern Conference and assigned to Hub City 1. These are the 12 clubs that will be resuming play in the Western Conference and assigned to Hub City 2. In the Eastern Conference, the top four teams by points percentage at the time of the pause who will play round-robin games to determine their playoff seeding are the Boston Bruins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Washington Capitals, and the Philadelphia Flyers. The qualifying round series matchups in the Eastern Conference are as follows. Number 5 Pittsburgh Penguins versus number 12 Montreal Canadiens. Number 6 Carolina Hurricanes versus number 11 New York Rangers. Number 7 New York Islanders versus number 10 Florida Panthers. And number 8 Toronto Maple Leafs versus number 9 Columbus Blue Jackets. In the Western Conference, the top four teams by points percentage at the time of the pause who will play round-robin games to determine their playoff seeding are the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Dallas Stars. The qualifying round series matchups in the Western Conference are as follows. Number 5 Edmonton Oilers versus number 12 Chicago Blackhawks. Number 6 Nashville Predators versus number 11 Arizona Coyotes. Number 7 Vancouver Canucks versus number 10 Minnesota Wild. And number 8 Calgary Flames versus number 9 Winnipeg Jets. Now to the 2020 NHL Draft Lottery. This is a bit complicated, as if what I've already told you hasn't been, and I apologize for that. The draft lottery will determine which clubs make the first three selections in the 2020 NHL draft, and it will be conducted in one or two phases, depending upon the results of the various draws. The seven clubs that did not resume play and the eight qualifying round clubs that do not advance into the playoffs will enter the draft lottery. At the time of the first phase draws, we won't know which eight teams won't advance from the qualifying round. So we
all right. There's Gary Bettman from his basement or wherever, and he's going over the lottery. And I don't think we really care about the lottery. I think we got a lot of information there, though. And
my head exploded at one point.
I know there's a lot there. We do know the Hawks would play the Edmonton Oilers.
Not a good matchup, but hey, but you know we'll take our chances.
The Hawks are supposed to be home anyway.
Yeah,
so it is a good matchup.
Not a good matchup with the Oilers. Connor, what's his name? Connor McDavid.
Yes,
let's call him Connor McGregor. Not a good matchup early on. I'll start breaking it down though. So we got plenty of time to get on the ice and get our stuff.
Here's what stood out to me. My biggest takeaway from everything Bettman said was this is still a long way away. Even though they're announcing all this with the two hub cities, which they don't know of, but can include a list of 50 hub cities. That was hilarious. He goes, and I don't know about you, Waddle. I don't want Chicago hosting this. You know what I mean? I don't think we're ready for that.
I don't know if the mayor would allow it. I mean, but they're going to follow the rules of the local officials. So,
but the thing that stood out to me in all seriousness is A, they didn't set dates yet. And like the training camps would not start, as in Bettman's words, until late July.
Yeah.
With then the games, obviously, then starting in August, that as he told you, those first, you know, that first part, that first phase then of games would take a month, and he talked about playing into the fall. So anyone who thought that this would be like, hey, we're going to play hockey in July and we're going to be done by September, that this is going to be a pretty long process, it sounds like.
So refresh my memory. Usually when is the Stanley Cup handed to the champion?
At June, what point? In early June.
Okay, so yeah, so you're pushing everything, push it back.
Well, and the training camps usually start for the next season in late September. You're playing preseason games in October, then you're playing regular games in late October.
Listen, I they're playing the time game now, and I get it. I mean, the further out you go, the more likely it is that you're not going to have to stop and start. Do you know what I'm saying? So they're playing the time game that hopefully between now and then, whether it's medical advancement or the virus dying down a little bit or knowing more, hopefully being closer to a vaccination, all that other stuff. Time is your ally in a lot of ways. And by the way, I don't listen. If the officials say yes, if this is a pod city, that's commerce for a town that could use it right now.
I know, but I'd rather have them in a city that's more confined. That's all I was saying. There's a lot going on in Chicago. There's a lot of people. The worst places for spreads is where you have a higher population.
Are you worried about them or are you worried about?
Yes, I want sports once they return to have the best chance of not being interrupted.
So you want them in a more isolated, less populated.
Yes.
Let's keep the young 20-something athletes out of the greatest summer city in the world, okay? Let's just
like, yes, yeah, let's do that. I like the NBA's way in Disney World. They're on an actual campus. You know what I'm saying? They're
been to a nightclub in Orlando? I mean, there's plenty of places to go out. I mean,
you're in a campus there.
I can imagine that some of the players in the NBA won't be able to get quote unquote off campus.
Look, people are going to go where they want to go. You're right. I mean, it's America, but still,
it's America.
I'm not going to say don't go to. It surprised me when I heard Chicago, because especially with the way we're going in our stages, the five-step plan with the governor and with the mayor, we have been a pretty conservative town, but they have opened the door wanting to bring in sports. So I don't know how this is going to go, but there will be the big particulars you need to know. Two pod cities, training camps won't start until late July. there will be the 5 seed against the 12 seed and so on and so forth. The other four teams will be playing for the best seeds, and it will be Hawks and Edmonton.
Do you believe the NBA will get back to work sooner? Sooner than that.
Yes, okay. I think so.
My prediction would be that.
I think baseball's beating them all.
I think that the based on how players get ready for the season, like NBA players are still conditioning and playing. Like we talked about last hour, you know, getting in ice shape or whatever that is, skating shape or whatever it is. Like NBA players, some NBA players are still just playing basketball.
Well, think about it. There are some guys that couldn't find a gym to work out in. I would think it'd be more difficult to find an ice rink to work out in and keep yourself going in certain, don't you think?
Yeah, of course.
Don't you think access to a rink is more limited than to a basketball gym?
Yeah, way, way harder.
Like some guys have basketball courts, even smaller ones in their houses. Right. I don't think, I mean, I may be wrong, but maybe Kaner does have a regulation rink in his house. I don't know. My guess would be no.
332-3776. What did you think of what you heard from the NHL's commissioner? It's the first real plan that we've heard officially. You know, we've heard a lot of the talk, but this is actually the figurehead of the league telling you the way they're going to do it. 332-3776. We'll talk to Brian Anderson, who did the play-by-play on TNT for the awesome match with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. That's at 4 o'clock.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
As we seek some return to normalcy, this is an important day, particularly for NHL fans. Since March 12th, we have been hopeful and optimistic that by developing all options and alternatives, we could get to this point. I know I join sports fans everywhere when we say we cannot wait for our players to hit the ice again. And I look forward to the greatest privilege of all, presenting the most storied and coveted trophy in all of sports to the captain of the 2019-20 Stanley Cup champion.
All right, that was Gary Bettman. Not too long ago, we carried most of his conference, his announcement live.
Do you want odds on the Blackhawks' chances of winning their series with the Oilers?
On the just the series on their odds?
Yeah.
I would say they're plus 260.
Cut it in half.
All right. Plus 130.
Well, you are a math major.
It took me a long time, though, to get there, Waddle. I don't know if you heard my brain.
They're 100-1 to win it all. I know that.
100-1. Look, I'd put 10 bucks on them.
Listen,
it's freaking hockey.
Listen, Tom Waddle, Mark Silverman, Adam Abdallah here. As a lifelong Blackhawks fan, I am excited that they get a chance to get into the dance. And if they can get into the power play, be successful in the power play, they have their top five in save percentage in the league. And if they can continue that up, they could make some noise. I'm not going to lie. And let it be known that at the beginning of the season, when Coach Q was let go and Jeremy Colleton was brought in, we were told that this was a playoff team. And now... they're
right.
A playoff team.
You're right.
Somewhere, John McDonough is like, I never should have been fired.
All it took was a pandemic. That's all it took. A global, once every 100-year pandemic, and the Blackhawks are in the playoffs.
Do you see some people on Twitter are calling it the COVID Cup?
That's funny.
I think it was Pat McAfee who said that. But, yeah, they're a while away. He would not give firm dates. Did that surprise you that they came out with an announcement without even a firm date on when teams are reporting to camp?
What surprised me was the message that we're not even looking to go back to camp until, what did he say?
Late
July. That's 2 months away. That's 2 months from now.
They're hoping that baseball can play in the first week of July.
Right.
Real games. Now, outdoors, I don't know if that changes anything, but...
I am a little surprised at the timeline for the NHL. I really am.
Well, no, doesn't it go back to being ready to play? Like, if you're a baseball player and spring training has ended, and we've talked to, you know, John Lester, we've talked to Jason Hayward about being ready, and Ian Happ about being ready, and, like, positional players should be ready to go. Like, you should be able to be like, hey, we're playing tomorrow. get ready. We're going to play. It's pitchers that need more of a ramp up.
Yeah.
And like, you're not going to see John Lester go out there and give you 7-8 innings in his first start.
Right.
But ultimately, like, yeah, a week or two tops, and then it's baseball. You're hitting the ball, seeing the ball, hit the ball.
Well, I think also is that, like, we talked to Ian Happ a couple weeks ago as well. Like, there are guys, and Jason Hayward, I mean, guys are in Arizona where there are, the rules are different, the restrictions are different, and guys have been able, it sounds like, to hit in cages and do some other things. But I'm with you. I think getting back up and ready to play Major League Baseball seems to be less of a hurdle, with no disrespect meant to the Major League Baseball players, than guys who have probably been off the ice for the better part of 2 months. So I think that it'll be harder to get the NHL ramped back up for those reasons, but I am still a little bit surprised at, because the longer you wait, you buy yourself time, yes, but you also start to bleed into next year. And my thought would be, what you're trying to get as much as, you're trying to accomplish two things. You want to get as much revenue as you can, and you want to crown a champion, but at the same time, you want to get back to a sense of normalcy as well. And when your season's going to bleed that far into, unless you're the NBA, and maybe you're having plans on starting your league at a different time anyway, which has been discussed.
Right, in December. All right, Jeff Passan is saying that the players are bristling at the latest MLB proposal. That came out today. Today is a busy back-to-work Tuesday, guys. We had the NHL with their announcement. The baseball negotiations are revving up again, and now fans are forced to take sides again. It's a very polar conversation. And we're going to talk to Brian Anderson. Brian Anderson's going to be a great guest for two reasons. He was in the middle of one of the best events over the weekend doing the play-by-play. And he's the voice of the Brewers, so he knows all about the baseball situation. We'll talk to Brian Anderson in 2 minutes.